This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, is the American public tiring of the media bias? Some mainstream reporters are claiming hostility from attendees at Trump rallies. We'll talk about that with Ash Scow, with the Washington Examiner. Also, the data dump by WikiLeaks suggests the White House has employed an unconstitutional religious test. Pete Hoekstra, former House Intelligence Committee chairman, has the details on that. And long after the media has moved on to other stories, the residents of states like North Carolina that were hit by Hurricane Matthew are still dealing with the aftermath. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory joins us with an update from the Tar Heel State a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. That's where you can find out more information. Got lots of resources there for you. As I told you, we've got a platform comparison between the two parties, video and a downloadable one that you can show to your friends. Also, a survey. I'll talk more about this a little bit later, but not a survey. Well, there is a survey, but I want to talk about the petition that we have there in support of Dr. Walsh. We had him on the program yesterday. He's the doctor that was hired to head up Georgia's public health system, and he was fired after they found out that he was also a lay preacher, and they looked at his sermons, and now they have requested that he subpoenaed his sermons. That was on yesterday's program. We've got a petition at the website, TonyPerkins.com, to the governor, Governor Nathan Deal of Georgia, saying, hey, respect religious liberty. Again, you can find that at TonyPerkins.com. All right, here's a news flash for you. The Center for Public Integrity released its 2016 campaign analysis showing journalists giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. Studies also show that the overwhelming number of journalists are registered Democrats. Now, is it just me, or does the media no longer even try to hide their liberal bias? Now, apparently a lot of folks are seeing the same thing I am seeing, and they're getting upset with the media, so much so that the media now is complaining that they're being treated unfairly at Trump campaign events. Wow, my heart goes out to them. With us now is Ash Scow. She is a commentator and writer for the Washington Examiner. Previously, she worked as an editor and writer for the Heritage Foundation and Heritage Action for America. Ash, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, let me start with that question. Is the media no longer hiding their bias? Or they just feel like they no longer have to even act like they're impartial?
Well, I think that was kind of overturned back in 2008 with Obama. You remember how many articles just about him being shirtless on a beach were written. I think they gave up on pretending to be impartial. But there's another theory that's kind of starting to come out right now, whereas most of them don't know their bias, in that they all grew up in the same kind of life, in the same kind of area, you know, upper middle class, like gentrified area. So they just all kind of espouse the same views, kind of liberal views, because that's the world they came from. And so to them, they have no idea they're actually being biased, because they just can't see it. So things that conform to their narrative are just normal. And things that don't, well, that's bias. And so that's what you see in charges against the conservative media.
Well, Ash, let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing with the American public. I mean, social media has been lit up with people calling out the obvious bias from the liberal media. Has it reached a level that people are just saying, you know what, enough is enough, we're not going to tolerate the media anymore?
Well, I think even that has been going on for years. I think at this point, I think after this election, there might be perhaps a serious backlash against the media that may be able to come about right now, whereas, you know, with Obama, we were still just early on into Twitter and social media, and Facebook was kind of barely or only around for a couple years to non-college students. And, you know, we kind of had the backlash in the early 2000s to biased media against Bush with the blogging community. And I think now we might just see that we have so many more platforms to where the bias can be called out, and that there's so many more people who see it. You know, a lot of the fact-checking with against Trump has been just so outrageous that it's just hard to ignore.
Well, you don't have to have much to have a platform. YouTube, you can have, you know, your own blog, and if you've got a good piece, it can go viral. And so, I mean, you can do a lot with very little these days. But I want to go back to the media and this, and I think you're right. I think it did turn in 2008. We saw a hard turn to the left from organizations, entities like MSNBC and CNN, not far behind. But is a part of this the 24/7 news cycle where, and you've got a lot of these commentary shows, and so even journalists who often appear on these shows, you know, are there giving commentary. So it's no longer just reporting. It's basically giving your perspective on what has happened.
Right, and it's these reporters who pretend to be objective in their writing, but then are allowed to give their opinion, and they're on with these news moderators who completely agree with them and, you know, give them a pat on the head for saying exactly what they want them to say. So they go back into their writing and they write these things and they're biased, but they just don't even, they don't know. I mean, and then that leads to, I mean, one of the things that was discussed when the report came out saying that journalists who did donated overwhelmingly to Clinton was, you know, some people like Jake Tapper has been really good about all of this by having commentary but still managing to be objective, basically saying, why are reporters donating at all? I mean, like, why would you even compromise your ethics in that way if you're going to claim to be objective and then donate? Like, why do it at all? It's too risky.
Well, unless, as you say, there's a new standard that's being applied to journalists where you no longer have to, you know, appear or act as if you are neutral in this, but you can just, you know, you can report on it, you can put money on it, and as we've seen from some of these leaked emails, you can communicate directly with the campaign and even help them on their messaging.
Right. There's a huge influence and access deal to this, but there's also, you know, who knows, if these lists get released and, you know, somebody's name is on there as donating to Hillary and, you know, the media might not have considered that, then, hey, maybe that person might get a job in a better publication, you know? I mean, someone from a liberal blog might end up getting hired to Washington Post or Vox or something like that, you know? So, I mean, I'm not sure if it will actually help anyone, whereas if your name gets released as having donated to Trump while you've been remaining objective, then you might be done unless, you know, Fox hires you.
That's quite amazing, Ash, when you think about what you just said, that there is this almost expectation that you will be a part of the progressive left as a journalist, and that could further your career if you are cozy with a campaign such as the Clintons. But if you are a supporter of Donald Trump, that could be a career-ending connection if that's made known. I mean, that's really astonishing.
Right. And it's the young man who broke the Solyndra story for the Daily Caller was actually just tweeting today. I can't recall his name, but he was just tweeting today that he was actually asked in an interview that, like, as a conservative, can you be objective? Because apparently liberals can be objective, but conservatives can't.
That's actually incredible. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Ash Scowl is my guest. She is a writer at the Washington Examiner. Now, Ash, you just recently wrote a story about the funds donated by journalists to Hillary Clinton, to her campaign. Any surprises in what you've uncovered as you wrote that story?
No. Well, I was surprised, honestly, that there were any journalists that donated to Donald Trump. $14,000 worth, 50 journalists. I was surprised that any would, quite honestly. But I just wasn't surprised by it. You know, I mean, this is what we've seen year and year again, where major media outlets donated heavily to President Obama compared to Mitt Romney. I mean, even Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, you know, the owner of Fox News, donated more to Obama than Romney. Now, Murdoch himself did not, but his employees did. So, I mean, that was this is just the same story every 4 years.
Yeah, it is troubling, though. You would think those that are going to report on the news, not saying that they in any way surrender their First Amendment or their ability to engage in the political process, but if they're going to be a fair reporter, it's kind of hard. It's kind of like, you know, putting money down on a horse at a race and then, you know, saying that you're not going to cheer for that horse to win. I mean, that's essentially what they're doing here is they're picking a horse in this race. And you would just human nature is such that you're going to gravitate towards supporting what you have put your money behind. I mean, the Bible says where your money is, there your heart is as well. And I would think that applies to politics too.
Right, absolutely. You can't tell me that somebody who donated to Hillary Clinton is secretly rooting for Trump. I mean, there have been some journalists that jokingly purchased Donald Trump's Make America Great Again hats. So that was kind of a donation, but they're not actually Trump supporters. They did so for satire or joke. So, I mean, that's the only way that I can actually see somebody giving a campaign money but not actually supporting that candidate.
Right,
but it's rare.
Well, it is. I do think we're in a new age where you have to take everything with basically a grain of salt that you get from the mainstream media. Ash, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great.
All right, Ash Gow. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. Again, there are alternative sources for news, all right? Washington Examiner is actually one that's in D.C., covers this stuff pretty closely, and they have some good reporters. And they cover it from a conservative orientation. CNS News, another one we have on quite frequently. WorldNet Day. I mean, they're out there, okay? Just be careful of where you're getting your news from. And I think this is very revealing when you see that many of the mainstream journalists are financially supporting the Clinton campaign. And, of course, as I've said, we saw from these WikiLeaks interviews, some of these reporters having very cozy relationships with the campaign, helping them in their messaging, and even helping slip questions to them that was going to be asked in some of these debates. So the media, as you can tell, they're trying to force feed us something. And usually when you force feed something, it's because people don't want to eat it. All right? Keep that in mind. All right. Still to come. Speaking of these WikiLeaks emails, say that five times real quick. The White House apparently has employed a religious test for hiring people in the administration, but it's not the one you think. We're going to be talking about that with former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Pete Hoekstra. And also, still to come, we're going to be joined by Governor Pat McCrory of North Carolina to give us an update on what's happening there as they recover from Hurricane Matthew. And it's Thankful Thursday. So a little bit later, be thinking, what are you thankful for? We're going to talk about it here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, Option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the Land of the Bible with us in March.
Does the changing of the seasons have you thinking about the future? If you're feeling like you can't contribute as you have in the past, maybe we can offer some help. There are many ways to make an end-of-the-year charitable gift. A cash donation comes with the advantage of a tax deduction. Transferring appreciated stock can allow you to avoid capital gains taxes. You could leave a gift through a will or trust by naming AFA as a beneficiary. And a charitable gift annuity provides a deduction for today as well as guaranteed income for life. As 2016 draws to a close, let us show you how to maximize your year-end giving for yourself and for AFA. Visit AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345. If the economy has you worried about what the future may bring, giving through the AFA Foundation could help. Again, that's AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you as we approach the election. Not long away, folks. And you need to be equipped, prepared, and also encouraging your family and friends to vote. And we have the tools to help you there at the website, tonyperkins.com. Also, if you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. Okay, according to some of the recently released emails by WikiLeaks, now again, I said this yesterday, I said every time we talk about it, I do not condone the fact that you have these rogue agents who are hacking into people's emails, okay? And not good, okay? This information now is out there, which is very revealing. The Obama White House kept a list of Muslims for top jobs in their administration. Now, the emails were sent to the chair of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, John Podesta, which is where all these emails are coming from. Now, this raises the question as to whether or not the Obama White House was applying a religious test for governmental positions. Now, what we know is that this list specifically designated was designed for the exclusion of Christians from Muslim-majority countries. They had to be Muslims. Now, we don't know what jobs it covered and all the details surrounding the list and its compilation. But we know that there's some problems here. Now, someone who knows a lot about national security is the former House Intelligence Committee Chairman Pete Hoekstra. Pete, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's very nice to be with you, Tony. Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, Pete, first, I guess I have to ask you the question. I mean, with your position, former position as the House Intelligence Committee Chairman, I mean, this is the kind of stuff you deal with, national security, you dealt with. I mean, just the fact that these emails have been hacked into and going back to Hillary's server and the emails that may have been hacked from there, that's problematic. These things are at risk. This shows that. But in this particular case, with the Obama administration creating a jobs list, a hiring list, based upon the fact that individuals are Muslims, is that not problematic?
It is problematic. You know, every administration or assumptive administration right now, there's two transition teams at work in Washington, D.C., partially funded by the federal government. They are developing policy frameworks for if their candidate wins. They're also starting to identify people that may serve in a future administration and what those jobs will be. But I find it very interesting that, you know, again, it appears from the content of these emails that they're expressly excluding Christians from these Muslim-majority countries in the Middle East, which is something that these countries and some of these countries, they don't even do. If you go to Jordan, King Abdullah has very much a mixed cabinet, including Christians and you know, a range of people, because they believe that it's the way to... They're, actually, Jordan's probably much more diverse than what the Obama administration was looking at.
Yeah, an aide wrote in one of these emails that was released, quote, "In the candidates for top jobs, I have excluded those with some Arab-American backgrounds but who are not Muslim." Would that then suggest that they were using a religious test?
It would suggest that. Obviously, you'd have to peel back a few more layers to see exactly what they were doing. But, you know, Tony, what we do know is that this administration coming into office wanted to change their relationship, America's relationship with the Muslim world. And so they engaged with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the group from which all these radical jihadist groups throughout the Middle East, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and groups like that take their inspiration from. It's, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood was founded in 1928 and with the express purpose of reestablishing the caliphate. This administration wanted to change the narrative with these folks. They put in, you know, they believe that many of the problems in the Middle East and the problems that with the Muslim world are the result of American foreign policy. If we changed our behavior towards them, they would change their behavior towards us. There was a bias towards, in many cases, radical jihadist groups. We changed our behavior. They changed their behavior, too. They became much more aggressive. They saw an opening and they took advantage of it.
Right. And we see that from a standpoint of our foreign policy. That's very clear, very evident. I mean, we see the Middle East imploding. But let's talk about what we haven't seen and what these emails give us just a glimpse into. If there was a profiling, a positive profiling of Muslims to put them in some top positions, which we don't have the list of those positions, and you talked about the cozy relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood, could we not have, I mean, this administration actually ceded some critical positions in our administration with people who may have a hostile view toward America's democracy?
Well, you and I might view it as a hostile attitude towards America's democracy. We're doing completing a study at the Investigative Project on Terrorism that also shows the extensive welcoming of Muslim Brotherhood groups and other radical jihadists in the United States. And going to back where we started this conversation, we know that, you know, whether it appears in appointments, Christians from the Middle East were blocked from coming here. We also can see from the refugee flows coming into America that very, very few numbers of Christians have been allowed to come into the United States as part of the refugee program, although they are the number one target for ISIS in Iraq and Syria.
Yeah, yeah, that's obvious. I mean, it's like 96% are Muslim. I mean, you get like 1 or 2%.
I think you're being way too generous. I think it's close to 99.6 or something like that. But it's the number of Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East who have been welcomed into the United States because of their refugee status is minuscule. And the number of people who have died in the Middle East as a result of the ISIS's focused genocide against them. You know, it's been horrendous.
Yeah. And this, again, just pulls back the curtain just a little bit so we can see that what we've long suspected to be the case is, in fact, the case. Pete Hoekstra, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Great to talk with you.
Thank you, and thanks for all your work, Tony. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Great guy. All right. When we come back, Governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory, is going to join us for an update on what's been happening in his state. I was with him the night before Hurricane Matthew hit the state. They hit it, and he's been busy, and I know what that's like. We're going to talk with him when we return, and then we're going to open up the phone lines, and it's Thankful Thursday. What are you thankful for? Be thinking. All right. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Some of the earnings reports coming out today are talking about lower forecasts in earnings for the fourth quarter. Not only are some of the numbers bad again today, but they're talking about fourth quarter already softening. Why? Because they're saying manufacturing here in America is continuing to drop off dramatically, and that is hurting many, many businesses, particularly those in the industrial natural gas and oil business, those suppliers for those manufacturers. Businesses today, business investment, you've heard me talk about this over and over again. I talked about it at great length last night at our town hall meeting. Business investment posted the biggest drop in 7 months. Now, keep in mind, this is a number that has been dropping, business investment, for the last 14 months, but this is the biggest drop this month in the last seven. We cannot have a thriving, recovering economy without business investment. And this indicates, again, they know far more than the average person knows, obviously, and they are not willing to put any money into this economy. Now, core durable goods down 4.1% over the past 12 months. 4.1%. And again, the core number coming out today indicates that we are in negative territory, 0.1%. It's going to be interesting to see that GDP number, but if it's anything over 1.5%, it isn't based on these numbers.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon, thankful Thursday. A little bit later, I'm going to open up the phone lines to see what you're thankful for. We're going to take a break from all the politics and all that stuff out there that has everybody so worried and concerned. And for just a moment, we'll be thankful, grateful heart. All right? It's good. It's healthy. But first, Hurricane Matthew. It left a path of destruction from the Caribbean all the way up to the southeast along the border there, the coast of the southeast of the United States. I was there that Friday evening, actually in North Carolina, at an event with Governor Pat McCrory, and got out of town before the hurricane hit. But it hit, and they've been cleaning up ever since. And joining us now with an update on how things are going there in the Tar Heel State is the governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I'd forgotten you and I were together, and we haven't stopped dealing with the hurricane since that storm hit Raleigh. And the dilemma we had, all that water in Raleigh and Fayetteville and other areas of the middle part of the state went downstream for the last 15 days, and we've had major devastation.
Yeah, North Carolina,
a lot of people hurting.
Tell our listeners a little bit about it, because you know how this stuff is. I mean, I know how it is in Louisiana. We had the floods here. In fact, I took a break from our flood relief here to go over to see you guys. And the press hits the initial stages of it with all of the, you know, the big things are happening, but they quickly leave
down.
Yeah,
they like to stand on the white sandy beaches. Yeah.
So how bad was the impact on your state?
Terrible. Just devastating. Billions of dollars of impact. We had three major rivers that for the last 17 days have been overflowing, and periodically it's been the most prolonged disaster I've ever been involved with in my life. And what's ironic is the disaster occurring long after the hurricane left the shores of North America out in the ocean. And we've had beautiful sunny weather while towns were totally going underwater along the Tar River, the Neuse River, and the Cape Fear River. And sadly, the floods tend to hit the poorer areas of the state and the poorer cities and towns and the neighborhoods that are totally underwater. We've probably got four towns that totally are underwater, towns from 1,000 people to 5,000 people that we're not even sure we can rebuild yet. I'm in Lumberton, North Carolina right now, where I just saw whole neighborhoods totally devastated. The water is just gone after the last 4 days, but we've got to make decisions of whether to rebuild or tear down. And if you do rebuild, how do you rebuild? Where do you get the money? In fact, I'm in front of a school, elementary school right now, that's been closed since the flood. And the school's probably only 15 years old, but we're probably going to have to tear it down because you get poisonous water from flooding and sewage into a school. It just basically destroys it. And it's environmentally toxic. So, and sadly, we've lost 28 people, too.
Wow. And how long was the water up? How long was the water up in these towns?
Well, it depends what area. The flood started hitting Fayetteville, North Carolina, got hit the first night right after Raleigh. And then Lumberton, North Carolina, where I'm at now, just dried out in the last 3 days. And we had I-95 closed for over a week. Then it hit on another river. It hit Greenville, Goldsboro, Tarboro, and Princeville. And then it also hit several other towns. And it's been a prolonged event. Every day I'd have a new town flood, depending where they were on the river, as the water flows down toward the ocean. Over some of the towns that flooded were 300 miles away from each other.
Wow. How many of your residents?
Every day I was dealing with a different flood and seeing the same dynamics. It's just been absolutely incredible. And
how
sadly,
many
of the 28 people who died, 25 died in their cars from flooding.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, we've dealt with a lot of flooding in Louisiana. It happens, a lot of flash flooding. Our water went down fairly quickly after our flood here recently. How many of your residents are still displaced?
We have about a little over 1,000 still in shelters, but we have many, many thousands displaced. But several thousand displaced. The dilemma is we don't have places to put them. Some of the smaller towns, hotels flooded in
right.
those towns too, so you can't put them in the hotels. But we're
right.
working well with FEMA, and we're resilient people, and the churches have been absolutely amazing. The Baptist men's group have probably fed thousands upon thousands of people in four different towns. And what's ironic is Charlotte and Raleigh and Chapel Hill and Wilmington, Nashville, you know, people are playing golf 30 miles away from the towns that were underwater. I mean, it's beautiful weather here. You would have never known there'd be a disaster in North Carolina. So it's pockets that look like war zones. And I'm in one of them right now in Lumberton, North Carolina.
Governor, I've got 30 seconds left. How can folks across the country help there in North
Carolina? We need cash to the charities, whether it be Red Cross or Salvation Army or NC Disaster Relief for Hurricane Matthew. We need cleaning supplies to clean. We need clothing. We need basic items like toilet paper and diapers. We need everything. I just came from a shelter where just people are going through clothes. And, you know, the CNN and CNBC and all them, they're long gone. But this is when the hard work starts.
All right. So,
in fact, Tony, the night you left, we actually had several drowned. It's very, very sad. Very
wow.
sad.
Well, Governor, thanks for joining us. Give us an update.
The faith community, by the way, Tony. They've just come through like you wouldn't believe. And God bless them. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Well, we'll see if we get some folks that were helped out by folks in North Carolina during our flood to see if we can't help you all out over there in North Carolina. Governor, good to talk with you.
You've been through it yourself, so you know what it's like to have a house flooded.
Absolutely.
And actually, some of the response came from Louisiana. And part of the supplies didn't get here because they're still trying to deal with Louisiana. My prayers are with you and your family, too.
All right, Governor, got to leave it there. Thanks so much for being with us. Talk to you soon. All right, folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the Values Bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Last week on October 16, Planned Parenthood was allowed to celebrate its 100th birthday. On that day in 1916, Margaret Sanger opened the world's first birth control clinic in New York City, which would later become the leading provider of abortions in the United States, responsible for the deaths of around 6.8 million people. The foundation of the organization was based in Sanger's passion for eugenics, specifically for limiting the reproduction of, quoting, morons, mental defectives, epileptics, illiterates, paupers, unemployables, criminals, prostitutes, and dope fiends, unquote, even arguing that they should be forced to be sterilized. Racism was also implicit in Sanger's list of those unfit to breed. This is the legacy that Planned Parenthood celebrated this past week, and it's a legacy that continues to this day, only couched in the language of compassion and choice, while it is simply an agent of death. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's Thankful Thursday. 866-372-7234, the number to call. All right, this is we're taking a break from all this other stuff. We're going to detox here. And you know what? It just, when you express the things you're thankful for, you know, you just kind of feel better about life. And so let me know, what are you thankful for today on this Thankful Thursday? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. By the way, speaking of North Carolina, I will be in North Carolina next week. I'll be speaking actually Monday at Liberty University at their convocation with all the students there Monday morning. And then I'll be heading to Farmington Heights Church, Raleigh Road Parkway in Wilson, North Carolina. That'll be Monday afternoon, and then we're going on into a few other parts of North Carolina next week as we move closer to the election. All right. Again, that number, 866-372-7234. It's Thankful Thursday. So if you're not thankful, don't call, okay? All right. Only thankful people can call. No, not really. You can call even if you're not thankful. Maybe. All right, let's go to Texas where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Thankful Thursday.
Hi, thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. How are you today?
I am wonderful, and I am so grateful that I have so much to be thankful for. You know, of course, the biggest is my salvation, and I'm also thankful that there are people who are willing to stand up and tell the truth, you being one of them. But I know that without the support of those that are under you there at FRC, your support staff and all of those, it would not be possible. And I'm grateful for your stand and for your bravery and the fact that you just keep telling the truth.
Well, thank you, Carol. I appreciate that. And I am actually myself very thankful for the tremendous team that I have at FRC, not only with the radio program, but the entire team of about 80 people who work day in and day out to advance faith, family, and freedom in this country, a great group of people. Carol, thanks so much, and thank you for being an inspiration for Thankful Thursday. That idea actually originated with you in an email that you sent me. And by the way, folks, you can send me emails. I'd love to read the emails from you. Tony@TonyPerkins.com. 866-372-7234. I know we got a lot of thankful folks out there. This is good practice as we're not too far away from Thanksgiving. Let's get in the get the thankful juices, not the turkey juices, but the thankful juices here flowing. All right, let's go to Missouri where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call. There's two things that I'm very thankful for, the way that God has taken care of me all of my life, but I'm also very thankful that for the first time in a long time, we actually have, on November the 8th, the ability to maybe stop the savage partial birth abortion of killing babies that have as much right to live as the mother.
Yes. Well, Bob, let me say I'm thankful for those that recognize that choice is actually before us. And one that I believe we have a responsibility to act upon. All right, let's go to, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Tennessee where Yvette is on the line. Yvette, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
God, absolutely.
Thank you. I want to say that I am very grateful to you and Washington Watch. I'm grateful to AFR and AFA. I'm grateful for the Values Voter Summit, which was absolutely amazing this year. And I'm very thankful that I got in my car in the nick of time to hear the message from the governor of North Carolina, because I, over the weekend, cleaned out all my children's old clothes, and I heard the governor say that they needed clothes. So I'm very thankful that I did not drop them off at Goodwill or somewhere. They're still in my house, and if you could at some point give me some information, address, phone number, how I can get in contact with somebody in North Carolina so I can ship all those clothes for all those poor people that are suffering after that big flood. I'd be very thankful to you if you could do that for me.
All right, Yvette, I will do that. We'll get something up on the website, TonyPerkins.com, a contact in the governor's office where you can find out where to send that. Thanks so much for calling, Yvette, and for being concerned. You know, having lived through the flood here in Louisiana, as the governor made reference to our home flooded, it gives you a greater sensitivity to those who are in need. I've shared this story before, but as my wife and I and the kids were in canoes and a flatboat paddling out, you know, my wife looked at me and said, you know, this is the kind of stuff that happens to other people that you see about on TV, not things that you live through. So it has made us a lot more sensitive to those who are going through these disasters. And it took me a while, but I'll be honest, I came to a point where I was thankful for that because I can now empathize with those and not just empathize, but actually be a part of helping others. And I think that's what being the body of Christ is all about, is helping one another. All right, let's go to Mississippi where Matthew is on the line. Matthew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you. Just want to say that I'm thankful for everything. You know, I've been given a second chance. I really can't go into details, but I've been given a beautiful daughter. I've been blessed. God's to bless me, and I really don't deserve it. But I just wanted to let you know that I'm just thankful for every day I have and every second I have.
All right, Matthew. Well, as we're thankful, I mean, a thankful heart is a happy heart. I mean, you cannot help but be joyful when you express thanks. So it's good to do. In fact, you know, as in the Psalms, we're told to enter the gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Thanksgiving it really prepares the heart to be happy and joyful. All right, let's go to Ohio where Sue is on the line. Sue, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I would like to be thankful. I'm very thankful that God has put a CMBD on my heart to pray for. You know, she is the young Pakistani martyr who is in prison there in Pakistan. And this week, we have a chance to sign the American. I'm sorry. I just think of her 24/7 in prison. She's been in prison for 6 years now. She has 5 young children. And her death sentence is 100 lashes and hanging. And her case is before the Supreme Court. And I'm just thankful that God enables us to pray.
And thankful that He hears our prayers. You know, that was Maryam Ibrahim. That's who I immediately thought of. She was the Sudanese mother that was imprisoned there a couple of years ago that we got involved in, found out about, prayed about, started advocating for, and she was sentenced to die and was, in fact, released and is now living in this country. In fact, living... actually, I just ran into her just a couple of months ago, her and her husband, Daniel, and they're doing well. So, Sue, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for having that burden, and continue to pray. Because, as I said, thankful that God answers. He hears, and He answers our prayers. Let's go to Missouri, where Edward is on the line. Edward, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, good afternoon. I'm thankful that I was out of a job for 4 years, and I had to learn how to trust the Lord during that time for everything. And on top of that, during that time, He brought me to a deeper understanding of His Word and Him. And that's what I'm thankful for.
Well, Edward, there's also with that comes a greater freedom when you learn to depend upon the Lord. And you, I've been through that. And you begin, you see the faithfulness of God, and so you are less concerned then about circumstances because God has seen you through previously. It's kind of like David when he was faced with Goliath. You know, he recounted God's deliverance from the lion and from the bear, and so you kind of, what you do is you build up a track record from God, with God, and you see His faithfulness, and it just makes navigating through life so much, I'd say, less stressful, even in the midst of great difficulty. Edward, thanks so much for calling and sharing that. All right, let's go to Kansas, where Mason is on the line. Mason, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, thank you. I wanted to say that I am thankful for my grandpa. He is the one that showed me where I go to find Christ, and I've been following him for about 10 years now, and I am looking into going into youth ministry.
That's awesome. And thank God for godly grandparents who sometimes have a little more time than the parents. Not saying that's necessarily good, but they do. And if they invested in the lives of their grandchildren, that's powerful. Mason, thanks so much for calling and sharing that today. You know, I was, you know, my two grandmothers were very special to me. Spent a lot of time with them. And just thankful, you know, grandparents just seem to have a little more time. And as a parent, I understand that. Parents are got a lot of stuff going on, raising kids and taking care of raising them and feeding them and all that kind of stuff. But just to sit and have conversations, valuable time that grandparents invest. Mason, thanks so much again for sharing that. All right, let's go to Kentucky, and let's talk to Frank. Frank, what are you thankful for today?
I'm thankful for my salvation, that I can get up every morning and praise, give God the praise. And also I'm thankful for my wife, and I want everybody to pray for Bibi that's in prison. If someone could take time out to pray for her every day. She's been there for a long time, and she needs to get out. The one that has 5 kids,
Yes. Yes, that's the one that Sue just brought up. I think it was 2 weeks ago, the Pakistani Supreme Court postponed Bibi's final appeal hearing. The ACLJ has not heard anything more on the new date for that hearing. So I join with Frank in praying for her and praying for God to move in a miraculous way. He can do it. He has. I've seen it. I've seen it twice now in cases like that. And in fact, we might try to get an update on that next week with the ACLJ. Okay, let's go to Frank. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate that and for reminding us all to pray for Bibi. Let's go to Kansas, where Erica is on the line. Erica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. How are you today?
I am wonderful. I'm thankful for so many things. I'm 21, and I'm really thankful that God has just given me amazing people in my life that I can look up to. He's given me awesome mom and an awesome dad and five awesome brothers, and I'm just really thankful for everybody that's just talking, telling the truth and telling it like it is. So I'm very thankful for you guys, all of you guys there at Washington Watch, and I'm very thankful for AFR and AFA and just everybody for being able to speak the truth and stuff in today's world. So thank you guys for all what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Erica. Let me before you go, so you have five brothers, right?
I do.
You've got to be one tough girl.
Well, that's what a lot of people say, so
Well, I'm glad you have a good attitude about it. Thankful for five brothers. Boy, they should be thankful that they have a sister who's thankful for them. Erica, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call. All right, folks, you can still, we're almost out of time here, but you can still email me or on Twitter. Let me know, at T. Perkins, why are you thankful? It's healthy. It's, as Barney Fife used to say, it's therapeutic. It's therapeutic, all right? Just to be positive. You know, I'm not all into that name it, claim it, positive type thinking, but the scripture, the Bible tells us to be thankful. I mean, you read through the New Testament, the letters of Paul. In fact, at least two occasions, he says, this is the will of God. And he talks about being thankful. We need to be thankful. And it helps in the midst of challenging and difficult times and election seasons like this, where literally the future of our country does hang in the balance. No doubt about it. But we can still be thankful. Thankful that God will hear our prayers. Of course, oftentimes, as God hears our prayers, we are the answer. When God taps us on the shoulder and says, okay, I've heard your prayer, but I want you to get up and do something about it. And folks, that's what I hope you're doing. And that's what I hope and pray that Washington Watch is assisting you in, is taking your stand, as God has called us all to stand with thankful hearts, but with our feet firmly fixed. As the Apostle Paul said, when we've done everything, when we've prayed, when we've prepared, and we've taken our stand, you got it. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.